Merkle Media.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Well, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary is Tack Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Keith Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison? Swangles in Fort Lauderdale.
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you're watching us on Rockfin, Odyssey, and.video, vigilante.tv, or you're listening wherever podcasts are served, thank you so much. We appreciate the support. If you want to connect with us, the website is theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Macroaggressions, and the Instagram is at Macroaggressions_podcast. Thank you so much to our sponsors. They make the show happen. Chemical Free Body has been with me since the beginning, and Tim James is over there. He's a mad scientist. He's making supplements that actually work. Imagine that. Imagine that in an industry filled with scammers that are selling you sawdust. Tim James is insane. He wants everything to be perfect in his formulas. I've been taking Green 85 every single morning for over 3 years now. I swear my wife can attest to it. She looks at me and says, "You're drinking that green stuff again?" I say, "It looks bad, but I assure you, it tastes pretty good. And I need it. It's really good." So I'll tell you what, if you want to incorporate something like Green 85 into your daily routine, it takes 3 minutes. There's no time commitment there at all. It'll make you feel a whole lot better. Go to chemicalfreebody.com, read up about it, see what you think. If you likes it, if you want to pull the trigger on it, use the promo code MACRO on the way out to save yourself a bunch of money. Also, thanks to the folks over at C60 Purple Power. They're making the best batch of C60 out there. I just saw Ken Schwartz at a barbecue a couple of weeks ago. He's such a good dude. He's a mad scientist, though. Just so you know, he's a physicist who discovered that when you're working with radioactive materials, you need to take a supplement that keeps you alive. He said that there was an absence of long-term nuclear physicists. They just didn't make it. And what he discovered was that C60 was a substance that was helping them stay alive longer. So he left nuclear physics and started C60 Purple Power. And I'll tell you what, you can read all about it over at shopc60.com. It's a free radical sponge. It's the most powerful antioxidant known to mankind. It's hundreds of times more powerful than conventional antioxidants. It was theorized by Buckminster Fuller back in the 60s. A team of scientists discovered the C60 carbon molecule in the late 80s, and they won the Nobel Prize for it. So it's like, it's a big deal. And if you've never heard of it before, then shame on you. How dare you? Go over to shopc60.com, read all about it. Use the promo code MACRO on your way out to save a little bit of money. Oh, I'm so excited for this one. We've got Amy Belair here, everybody. Hi, Amy. Good to see you.
Hi, Charlie. It is such an honor to be on your show. I love your show. And just so you know, when I buy my C60 Purple Power, I use your affiliate link.
Woohoo! Thank you. We appreciate that. I'll tell you, if you just outsource your critical thinking to the mainstream media and let them tell you how to take care of your body, you'll be really disappointed, I think.
Absolutely.
You know, and you know, listen, you've done your in the industry of helping people improve the quality of their life. Some of that is physical, some of that is mental, right? Emotional, you know, coming at problems from a different angle, getting in touch with who we are. It made me think when I was getting ready for this interview, it made me like think about a, like maybe kind of a deep question. And I don't know if you have the answer, but my guess is that you've got a pretty good idea of this or more so than I do, but who are we? You know, like who are we as human beings? What are we doing here? Are we just ants in an ant farm that somebody's watching and going, oh, that one likes to dig a tunnel that direction. And that one likes to do this. And look at them. They're fighting with each other. What's the point to all of this? It feels very, some days it feels like there is no point. Other days I feel totally inspired. I don't know enough about my body, to be honest with you, to know what's going on. I don't know enough about how the sun impacts me. I don't know about solar cycles. I don't know about vibrational energy. I'm a dummy when it comes to all this stuff, and I want to not be. So the more you can explain to me about what you've discovered, how this all works, I'd really be interested in hearing it, because it feels like if you don't know, you can be kind of floating out there, and that's an opportunity for somebody to influence you and say, oh, well, let me tell you how it works. It all works because Donald Trump is making it work. Trust the plan. You're like, oh, okay. You don't know. You get captured by these ideologies that are pulling on you. So like, who are we? What are we doing? What are we doing here?
Yeah. I mean, I have spent a lot of time thinking about this and exploring it in the Akashic Records, which is that's like my go-to. To me, the Akashic Records exists in the 11th dimension. It's kind of the cosmic web that connects everything. But more accurately, it feels like the internet, or like, you know how we have cloud storage for like, for example, we're on Zoom right now. So you have Zoom cloud storage. So it's not stored locally. It's in the cloud. Like technically it's a, you know, whatever. In 3D terms, I understand it's a bunch of giant servers everywhere, but the Akashic Records is like, we are the hard drive, our bodies are the hard drive, and it can only store so much information. And then it goes into the cloud, and we have a cloud all around us. And so we each have an individual cloud that's our personal Akashic Records. And then we have a collective Akashic Records that is the, you know, the composite records of everything that all of us have experienced through all lifetimes, all timelines within those lifetimes, all the dimensions, all the things. But I'll preface this by saying that I am not asking anybody to subscribe to my belief system. I'm not trying to push a belief system on anybody. I'll just share what I have found about who we are. So last year, I started having these, they felt like memories of being a higher dimensional being that we would equate, I think, with the Anunnaki, when we hear stories about the Anunnaki. And I felt like, it's like I could see it from a vantage point of being outside of here, outside of Earth, and we are kind of all looking down at Earth, and the human beings kind of looked like ants from that perspective, but they were also like, we didn't create humans. When I say the, like, I don't know if the Anunnaki is the right term. That's just the best framework I think people can grasp onto to understand what I'm saying. But those beings, whoever I was remembering, we didn't create humans. I believe that humans are divinely created, just like all the organic things here are. And just like that, those higher dimensional beings are. But we were looking down at Earth, and we could influence what was going on here. And we were kind of like those asshole kids at the, you know, like sitting outside, like flooding the anthill with the garden hose.
Yeah.
And we didn't really think anything of it because we could not connect with the experience of the humans. And then eventually we decided, like, oh, we can incarnate into a human experience and go have that experience. So we started incarnating, and realizing that, oh, it really sucks when the anthill gets flooded. Like the suffering here is very real. It counts for something. It gets stored in the Akashic records. It's not just for nothing. And at that point, when we realized that, it feels to me like there was a break off into two groups. So previously, these higher dimensional beings were like, and I think they were just fourth dimensional beings. It was all one cohesive group. We were all flooding the anthill. And then when we started incarnating, one group decided that this was not okay. And we wanted to make reparations for the damage that we had caused and help to advance the conditions for humans in a way. And the other group decided like, no, this is our, it's kind of like our Westworld. This is our playground. Like we want to prune the development of humans and keep it so that we can continue to incarnate here and have all of our pleasures and have a good time. You know what I mean? That, yeah. So I started seeing it like that and remembering all of that. And then I started to get all this information about who and what humans actually are. And I understood that we are the guardians of free will. So if you're born into a human body, then you are meant to exist within the bandwidth of the third, fourth, and fifth dimension. That's where your body is meant to be. Mm-hmm. And at the third dimension and the fourth dimension, basically we are the guardians of free will. So we have a ton of power, so much power. We don't even realize how much power we have. That's the gigantic, cosmic, ridiculous joke, is we think that we're so unimportant and insignificant and powerless, but actually we are the ones that are choosing in every single moment. It's impossible not to choose between, I don't know, opposites, like the light and the dark, good and evil, you know, whatever. We are the choosers and we are the experiencers. And as such, we then create through that choice and that experience. And it's like wielding a double-edged sword, a giant, one of those giant Valyrian steel long swords from Game of Thrones. And we don't even realize that we have that power and we're doing it all the time. And I saw that we also have all of these functions through our seven chakras that we are completely unaware of. And from my perspective, it looks like that is deliberate. Yeah, it's deliberate. Like our shit has been scrambled through multiple lifetimes by that group. I call them the Enki group and the Enlil group.
Yeah.
So that
we hear about them.
Yeah, they're the ones that want to uplift humans. The Enlil group is the ones that want to keep us down so that we can just be used for their enjoyment. And the Enlil group has been extremely successful at scrambling our shit through all of our chakras so we can't remember how to use them. We don't remember what sort of like magic and gifts we naturally carry in our chakras, and we kind of function ass backwards. And then we gaslight ourselves, like where we are now, they don't really have to do a lot of like killing and torturing anymore because they did that part. We have it in our Akashic memory. So even if, you know, we've been lucky enough, like I've been lucky enough to never have been tortured in this life, I have a memory of it though. So I have very real fears. I know that that's a possibility and that mediates how I show up in the world. So they've done a lot of work, and now they kind of just get to sit back and coast in a lot of ways because we just gaslit the shit out of ourselves and, you know, like perpetuate this crap on each other. But actually we are, I wouldn't call us the center of the universe or anything like that, but we have our place that is very, very important. And when I see our original divine blueprint, sometimes it moves me even to tears because we're so far from it. And we're capable of so much. We can create something so beautiful in this world, but it's going to be quite a process to get back to that place. But I believe that's what's happening right now, is we're moving back to being able to remember all of those features that we have and those abilities that we have.
There's a scene in the movie Contact. Have you seen that movie with Jodie Foster and Matt McConaughey? Based on a book written by Carl Sagan, and there's a scene in it where she travels. They give her this encoded message. They build this time traveling ship, sort of, And Jodie Foster is the astronaut. She volunteers. They put her in this. She has this experience that's very difficult for her to talk to people about, but they put her on a beach and they have this figure walks down the beach towards her. And it's this guy, it's her dad who had died when she was a kid. And they're having this conversation and the dad says to her, and she noticed, she's a scientist. So she noticed, she says, "You're not really my dad. You're just what's sent to make me feel comfortable about this conversation." And he kind of smiles and goes, "Well, you always were, you know, very observant." And he says to her during this conversation, your people are capable of such beautiful creations and such horrible nightmares. You, mm-hmm. you have to get a handle on this. This ability for you guys to destroy, it's just, it's incompatible with the universe. And as he's having this conversation to her, with her, you can see that there are these things that are coming in, almost like meteors coming in the background. And those are more people like her that have gotten the code, cracked it, put it together, built the spaceship, and have come in to get the message. And it's so she's having this epiphany with this guy who looks like her dad, who's telling her, "You guys got to get your act together back there at whoever you are, humans." And she's thinking, "We're like the center of the universe." And meanwhile, she's realizing that as she's having this conversation, dozens of other civilizations are figuring it out at the same time. They're here as well, you know. So it was a very right. profound, very, you know. And Hollywood gets involved and they do their thing. But the messaging in that movie was spectacular, and the that one particular scene was very important, because it's basically the universe, or it's whoever created. And his response, she says, "Who built this?" And he says, "We don't know. We don't mm-hmm. even know. We don't know. It was here when we got here," is what he said. And so it always made me think that, like, you know, for all the good days we have, and hopefully we have more good days than bad days, we have this ability to turn off the bad stuff if we want to. Maybe not all of it, but a whole lot of it. And yet we don't do it. We choose not to do it as a society. Maybe it's cultural. Maybe it's these shitheads in Washington, D.C. that are making these decisions. But somebody has decided, somebody has tinkered with us to the point where I feel like we're doing it wrong. There's too much pain and suffering for us to be doing it, for this to be set up, for us to be acting the right way. It feels like we're either doing it wrong, or, like, are we on some sort of prison planet where we're forced to learn through experiences? I mean, you have a beautiful day, you go to a wedding and there's these people and there's all this love, and then you can get on your phone in the parking lot and see people starving to death on the other side of the world. And so this juxtaposition of, like, the amazingness of the world and the misery of the world all coexist at the same time, at the same place. It's just hard for me to wrap my head around sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, in a sense, I think that we're on a prison planet, but I don't think it was designed to be that way. And the great irony is we are the ones that are manifesting our own imprisonment. But I don't believe, like, so what I mean is that I perceive that the world, as we understand it, there's this beautiful organic holographic matrix. So reality to me looks and behaves like a holographic dream projection. So, you know, whatever you believe and experience on the inside, you just project outwardly onto the green screen of reality, and it reflects back to you. And that's the part where we have to get a handle on our shit, because we do manifest nightmares, but we can manifest beauty. It's up to us. But there's this false matrix overlay that's almost like you could liken it to a Photoshop image versus, like, being in, like, a Photoshop image of nature versus being in nature. Do you know right. what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's a little bit exaggerated. It's a little bit, it's got a glamour on it. It's hypnotic. It kind of draws us in, but it's not reality. And it's encoded with all kinds of misery programs that cause us to waste so much of our creator energy on nonsense, utter and total nonsense, like the pursuit of conventional beauty standards, for example. Like, what is that? What is it? It's insane. The amount, when you think about the amount of human potential that's going into that, it's just mind blowing. And that's just one example. And that, like, all of those misery programs are basically designed to hook us into that false matrix so we continue to feed it and keep it alive. And like, we kind of stay stuck in that. I don't think it's a prison planet. Like, we have to come and learn through these horrible lessons. It's more like there is something that is living off of us, like a parasitic energy that's living off of us. And that is keeping us in a state that we would understand as being imprisoned, but it is powerless without us because it's living off of us. So we are the ones that are manifesting our own imprisonment, but we're manifesting it through the suggestion that it provides. So, you know, it's like, it's telling us that we are unworthy. It's telling us that we are insignificant. It's telling us that it's hopeless. Even the way, like the scenario we were describing of being at a wedding in person and like surrounded by all this love, and then being able to go on Instagram, for example, and see, yeah, an image of some kind of devastation and suffering from somewhere else in the world. I'm definitely not trying to say that that suffering isn't real or it doesn't exist, but it's virtual. It's not on our doorstep. Yet so much of, like, it feeds into our reticular activating system. It causes us to manifest based on that suggestion, you know? So it's really, to me, it's like picking out, like seeing the false program and calling it for what it is and like extricating, unsubscribing from those programs as we notice them.
I remember when I was in high school sitting in my manifestation class at third period. Oh, wait, no, that never happened. They don't teach us this, right? But you can get better at it, at manifestation. There's a way to do it, right? You can, this is a skill set that you can learn.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Totally. Well, we're doing it all the time anyway. We're just doing it unconsciously.
Okay. And you have a boot camp that can teach people how to get better at this, right? This sounds like something that should be like core curriculum class for high school. You know what I mean? Like, hey, we're going to teach you how to make your life better. We're going to teach you how to bring more into your life that you want. If I were running the curriculum and not Bill Gates with Common Core, I would want something like this in there, and yet it's not available to the average person that goes through school. But luckily, it is available. You just have to go out and seek it, right? So what do you do at a manifestation boot camp? If somebody was interested in getting involved with your camp, what would that be like? What would they need to do? Would they need to get themselves sort of like, is there prep work for them to do, like physically get your body kind of cleaned out, get your mind cleaned out? Like, how would you suggest somebody approach the concept of improving their manifestation? What's the best way to do it?
Yeah. Well, the reason I created the boot camp, I mean, typically I'm more of I like to teach, I like to impart information, but I wanted to do a boot camp because I know that just like with everything in this realm, consistency is the key. If you are not consistent, it will not happen, period. It's like the same as deciding to learn how to play the piano or get in shape or any other, you know, transformation we want to experience in the 3D and the 4D, it's a process. So I really wanted to, like, my boot camp is set up to be 90 days where, like, for 90 days, I'm going to deliver some kind of like riff, inspiration, tip, whatever. Have a community for accountability so that people can stay on track for 90 days and see what happens when they really get some momentum behind them. But in terms of preparing, like, I think it's advisable all the time to clean ourselves out. It really is. And that being said, you know, I don't think it's necessary too, because there's this, I don't know. It's easy to fall into the perception that I always have to be doing something to improve myself or fix myself or something like that, or I'm not good enough the way that I already am. Like, I think somebody can definitely be eating Doritos and drinking beer and manifest. They already are.
Thank God.
They can be playing bingo and chain smoking and be manifesting all the time. But definitely, like, if one wants to really up their game and open up their psychic channels, cleaning oneself out is a really good idea.
I heard
but
you
in terms
on,
of
oh, go ahead. I was just going to say, I heard you on with Brandon Thomas on Expanding Reality, talking about parasite cleanses, talking about the things that come out of your body. It seemed like, oh, that would be a good idea to do regardless of what you're doing, yeah. Right? Get the parasites out of your body.
Totally. Because I honestly think the parasites are a physical manifestation of the astral parasites that they're the ones that are harvesting off of our energy.
And if you can get rid of that, right? If you can get rid of somebody that's stealing your louche, your spiritual energy, then, I guess I would suppose it does two things. First of all, it obviously gets rid of that factor, but then it frees you up to use more of that energy for yourself, right? Like just it's the simple act of removing them. And I did an ivermectin parasite flush a couple months ago. I was listening to you guys talk about it, and I was like, I got to do it. And then Lindsay Sharman's like, oh, there's ivermectin, you can do this. And so I had a bunch, and I had a really weird response to it. Like day three, my left leg, like above my ankle, but like between my calf and my ankle, was just buzzing. It just felt like it was buzzing. And in my mind, I'm going, oh, I have tiny parasitic worms that have come into my foot somehow, and they're in my left ankle, and they're all dying right now. They're all getting zapped by this ivermectin. I have zero proof that any of that stuff is actually happening, but in my mind, that's all was happening. But so again, maybe it wasn't doing anything. Maybe my mind was killing parasites. We never know how strong that is. But it seemed to me like anything that you can do to remove something that's inside your body that is sucking your energy, whether that be a physical parasite, or let's take it a step further, whether there's somebody in your life that is like an external parasite that is sucking your soul or your desire or your goodness or whatever, right? We think of internal parasites, but external parasites, just as bad, right? Maybe even worse.
Yeah, totally. No, for sure. Those things, like, that's just it. Is like, we're in the process of raising our standards and just being like, it doesn't have to be this way. And it doesn't mean that we're going to like fix it all this year or this decade or whatever, but every move that we make in the direction of raising our standards and, you know, clearing out everything that doesn't serve us, as cliche as that sounds, it adds up, because exactly like you said, it liberates so much energy. So if you think about that person in your life that's just sucking you dry, that person, I like to think of the friend that is they always have time to talk about their shit. And once they've unloaded on you, they're like, okay, I gotta go, bye. And it's, you know,
yeah,
like those examples of, or people that just are always taking you down when you're trying to get ahead or make some changes, they just cut you down, whatever. Like those people are taking up so much energy in our lives. The parasites, the literal physical parasites that live in our body, are shunting away energy that our body needs to heal and restore itself. It's all taking us away from functioning at our, even close to our peak expression, basically. And everything that we can do to raise that standard, it really goes a long way. And when you learn about compound interest, you know, if you've ever seen those YouTube videos of how a penny a day ends up for 31 days equals like $2 million, at first it feels like nothing's happening. It feels like it's pointless. It feels like we're making these big changes or we're putting this effort in, whatever, for nothing, but it compounds. And I think one of the biggest things working against us is that we're very programmed towards entitlement. I was talking about this with my mom last night because I have an 18-year-old son and he's an amazing person. He's so, so grounded and so like just has a good head on his shoulders. But I still see the way the entitlement program is working with him. Like he wanted to get a car before he took a driver's training class. And you know, I just have to remind him, like, that's not the way it works, son. That's not serving you. Like, you don't just get the thing without putting in the time. But it's not because he's a bad person. It's because I perceive that we're deliberately programmed with this entitlement bullshit so that we don't want to put the work in to improving our own situation. And we just want the good thing to happen right away. We also live in the age of Amazon and, you know, the internet and instant gratification. So those two together really, really make it hard to take responsibility, plus all the victim programming.
Oh yeah.
And all the social justice crap, you know, it's just like, yeah, all of it combines to make us just want to stew in our victim shit and feel like somebody should be coming to help us. Somebody should be handing something out. We don't want to put the work in. And we negate those initial steps because they don't feel like they're doing anything. But those initial steps are necessary for the compound effect to happen.
Yeah, it's a good point. We're in a, you know, we know we're in a toxic environment physically. We've got bad, but water's bad, air's bad, you know, the food is poisonous, all these things. But we're also in an emotionally toxic environment as well. When we have a world like TikTok and and I don't want to put it all on social media, but it's clearly not the best thing, especially for developing minds. It creates all sorts of anxiety. But we unfortunately, at least here in the West, we tend to like the toxicity of it all. We tend to get into it. We tend to watch bum fights. You know what I mean? Like, we watch crazy stuff on, you know, I feel sometimes like they know us better than we know ourselves, or that they find the insecurities in us in social media and play that up. I mean, you know, everybody wants to be a social media star, of course. And that, I think, is disappointing when you find out that you're not going to be one, or even if you are one, like, who cares? Like, I don't know that that's something to aspire to. Do we have the wrong... Have we allowed ourselves to embrace the wrong value system here in the West? Because it seems like the things that we put on, like, on a pedestal, like being famous and being rich and doing all these things, it doesn't always seem like those are the happy people. Like, it seems like those people look pretty good, but then when you get behind them, you go, oh man, everything's a mess over there. Like, have we just embraced the wrong set of values?
I mean, I think so. I perceive that we've been fed those values. And even as I say all this, I want to, like, also clarify that at a higher dimensional level, it's all us. So on the ground level as a human being, I do perceive that there is a group that's fucking with us, basically. But to only see it from that level just keeps us in a state of polarity where, you know, it's us against them. That doesn't get us anywhere. So at a higher dimensional level, it's kind of like realizing that we are all the characters in the dream of Great Dreaming Mind. And just like when we wake up from our own dreams, turns out the bad guy was actually us and everybody else was us. It's kind of like we also have to transcend it. It's like holding the duality. Like, yeah, there is a group that's messing with us. And also, we are not powerless to them because we're all the same consciousness. But yeah, when I look at it, I think that we are being fed values that do not, I just ask myself, like, who's this actually serving?
Yeah. Are you there?
Sorry. I don't know if the internet here is bad or what's going on.
I think mine says that my internet is unstable. Sorry. My internet is unstable. I apologize. Maybe I'm unstable. I don't know. Could be both.
No worries. No worries.
You said that we're third, fourth, and fifth dimensional beings. Three dimensions, I understand. What's the fourth and fifth?
The fourth dimension is the astral. It's the, you know, when people talk about astral traveling, that's where they're going, into the astral. It's also the dream realm. So that's where all of our dreams happen. And it's also time and space. So the third dimension is, you know, physicality, like volume, dimension. The fourth dimension is what allows chemical processes to occur so that nothing is static forever. In that 3D form it takes, it eventually changes. And then the fifth dimension is this place where we, right now, we are super programmed to be in our brains. So to interface with reality through our brain, the ideal place to interface with reality is through our heart. And a lot of us, I think, are in the process of being guided down into our heart. It's very painful. It usually involves a lot of upheaval and like deep introspection on a level that most of us would rather not do. But when we're seated in our heart and we're super open with each other and ourselves and our environment, we are reading things on a truer level. Like we're taking in the true information. Like we could connect with each other heart to heart and know the other person better than we can if we're connecting through our minds. And when we're truly anchored in there, and the majority of us are anchored in there, it's like we remember that we actually are all one. This is actually a dream. We are the lucid dreamers within the dream. And yet we still get to retain a sense of individuality. And from there, we can create something truly beautiful because we understand what this is. So right now, I perceive that we're more in the fourth dimension than the third. Like most of us aren't even deeply anchored in our bodies anymore. We're all in our head. We're thinking about things, feeling things, and we're working through all of the stories that we carry. Like we all understand ourselves and understand reality through internal narratives. Like I'm this person and this is what always happens to me. And this is the kind of relationships I have and, you know, whatever. Sometimes they're good stories. Sometimes they're not so good stories, but we're working through the fourth dimension. And that's where all the manifestation occurs too, is like really realizing that this is a holographic dream projection and you can manifest anything. You just have to get a handle on your internal shit to do so.
Yeah. You got to be careful what you ask for, right? It's like the genie with the lamp where you got to get some clarity on what your wishes are before you start wishing for them, right? Because they might come true.
So, yes. Yes, totally.
Yeah. What about the inverse of this? What about, is there such a thing as dark energies? There's a negativity that comes over some people that I spoke with a lady many, many years ago who was a friend of a friend, and she was a psychic, not a neon sign on Main Street psychic, you know, but like on the down low, did that with clients professionally and didn't really talk too much about it with people that didn't know what she was doing. I got introduced to her through my friend. And the first time I met her, I walked in, didn't know her, never met her before. And she said, "Oh, no, it's nice to meet you. Your dad is with us here tonight." And I went, "What?" And my friend grabbed me and he goes, "It's cool." That friend later killed himself. And I spoke to that psychic. I stayed in touch with her, especially after this. And I said to her, you know, I remember having like a 4-hour phone conversation with her about how it all works and what, and I remember saying to her, "Well, if you ever talk to, you know, my friend, make sure to tell," and I couldn't even get the words out of my mouth before she said, "Let me just stop you right there. I can never speak to him. He's gone to a place I can't reach." And I remember feeling like this chill in me. And I never understood suicide. It's a part of our society. It's a part of our culture. It's obviously, it brings up a lot of really heavy emotions. I wonder if in your experiences with all of this, that you've ever had anything that might enlighten me as to what she was talking about when she said that he's in a place that I can't reach anymore. Do you know anything about that? Is anything about that little story connect with you on anything that you've heard about this, how it all works?
It does. Well, what it brings up for me is that I also had another memory last year of the fall of, you know, kind of the one that is talked about in like biblical texts and ancient religious texts. And so there was this fall. It happened down through all the dimensions. The farther away from source it got, the more exaggerated it got. And the third dimension is the place. That's why we're the guardians of free will, because we are at the borderline between the upside down and the right side up. Like the, so basically there is, you can go past, I think that's what they're talking about with hell. You can go past down. There's this reversal, like there's a basement layer and you can go even farther down than that. And when you go down past that place, everything goes into reversal. And I think it's extremely difficult to extricate energy from there, extricate souls. It's, I don't know, it's hard to get into because it's just hard to translate into human words unless I know that somebody has the same foundational context that I have. Otherwise, I'm kind of like, am I making any sense, or the words I'm using? But basically, I think I really do perceive that there are demons and there are really dark energies, and they plague people for real. It's really upsetting, and it's like a hungry, it is a parasitic energy. It's starving because it has cut itself off from source, God, whatever, the totality. It is no longer being renewed by that source of energy. And so it must always be siphoning light off of others. And I think that's what is behind this false matrix. And that's what's really behind suicide. Like, I perceive that people do have entity attacks, and they do have dark astral parasitic energies that mimic their own voices and say terrible things to them and plague them all the time with intrusive thoughts that then engender really painful emotions. And it's kind of like, when you realize that you're, like, to go back to physical parasites or like yeasts or whatever, like when you have a yeast overgrowth or you have a lot of parasites, you'll have cravings for food that is not good for you. You think it's your craving. It feels like your craving, but it's not. It's the craving of the yeast, let's just say, and it is releasing chemicals that cause you to crave it. It doesn't feel separate from you. And I think it's the same with astral parasites, where people will, they'll have these intrusive thoughts that are looping over and over purposely to create these painful emotional responses, which then allow these parasites to siphon off their light. And I do perceive that it gets really dark, and there is a darkness that would like to take us down, all the way down. And for whatever reason, I think it's so individual, it's hard to extrapolate in generalities, but some people encounter that and others don't.
Is there a way to, if somebody has something like that or believes they have something like that inside, I'm not talking about the yeast stuff, my functional medical specialist Christian Yordanov in Portugal has got me on stuff to get rid of two different yeast stomach issues that he found when he did my urine work. In fact, checked all my stuff and said, "Oh, you've got some gut issues going on. I've got, take this and take this. You've got candida. You know, we can get rid of it with this and this." And you go, "Okay, great." He diagnosed it. He recognized what was going on based on that, and he said, "You have this situation going on here." But if there's not a functional medical specialist that you can talk to, but you've got a spiritual parasite attached to you in some way, shape, or form that is beyond maybe even your understanding, what would you even do to get rid of it? I know that there's a religious component to it. Some people are like, "Well, you've got to have an exorcist and everything." Okay, but what if you're not somebody that it falls into this traditional religious area, and you're somebody else, and you say, "I don't want." This emotional shadow following me anymore. I want to get rid of it. Is there a way? Do you have to fight that battle? Do you have to ask it to, can you ask it to leave? I mean, have I watched too many movies? Or do you have to do the work to make it leave? Do you have to make your body inhospitable to it? Do you have to fight it with positivity? Like, what would be the strategy for getting rid of something that is really difficult to even define, let alone understand?
Yeah, I mean, that's super hard part, right? Is that, like, it's not like there are conversations and support groups for the most part. It's certainly not in the mainstream about all this. So right there, it's very, very isolating and alienating. And that only works to serve that dark consciousness. But so number one, you would have to decide what you're living for. Like you'd have to come up with your reason to live. You know, for some people that might be our children if we have them, or our, you know, our close relationships. It's almost always about love, because at the end of the day, really nothing matters. Like for all of us on our deathbed, however it comes, I think all we're actually thinking about is the love that we shared and created, and regrets around that. So it will be coming up with your reason to be here, your reason to live and do the thing. It is about telling them to fuck off, basically, and understanding that we, like, they cannot operate without our permission. They simply can't. It's a law. It's not, there is no getting around it. That's why we see it. They're always tricking us. It's so sneaky. They're always putting us in our movies, our entertainment, our news media, all the ways, because they're finding, you know, sneaky ways to get our permission. And the permission is very seldom something obvious, where like a demon is literally not going to walk up into your life and be like, hello, I would like to take you over and fuck your shit up and cause you untold amounts of misery. No, they're going to come in through the side door in some, you know, some little way that we can, if we're very self-aware, which is why I think there's a lot of noise in our lives, so that we're not self-aware. We can feel that first place where it comes in, and it just feels like a little, like I don't want that in my field, but we usually override it. And we're like, oh, sure, whatever. Like I remember Lindsay Sharman was on Tinfoil Hat once, and she was talking about how she got a dark entity attachment through tarot readings, and the way that she was taught to do tarot readings or something like that. And she felt it, and but it's subtle at first and it starts to build. The way that they're always going to get in is through our trauma and through the painful things that we believe because of the trauma we've experienced. And trauma is self-defined. So obviously there are traumas that we can look at, and all of us would pretty much agree like that's traumatic, like child abuse or something. But trauma can also be an experience where you just feel like you were never truly seen by your parents, and you feel like they didn't want you, whether that was true or not. It's like your perspective, and it changes the way you feel about yourself. You start to believe that there must be something not like something about you that isn't adorable enough or isn't fun enough or whatever. And that's why your parents don't love you, whatever children do, right? And those programs that are, or those basically, they're like deceptions that are created. Like, I'm not worthy, I'm not lovable, there's something wrong with me. Those little things that we're subconsciously thinking, but usually not consciously thinking, those are the footholds that dark energies get into. And so in order to, like, if somebody has a really hefty entity attachment, the way to get rid of it is essentially to be brave enough to go into your own past within this life, potentially like your Akashic past, meaning like past lives, things like that, and find the places where, like, find the story, find the thing where that untruth lives, and choose yourself for the light. It's an active choice. It's an active choice for us to believe that we are worthy, even though we are inherently worthy. For all of us who are adults, we have to actively choose it. Because even if we had the best childhood ever, like, we have received so many unworthiness programs everywhere. And I mean, that's what makes it really challenging. The way I'm describing it makes it sound like a simple process, but if you deeply believe and have believed since childhood that you are unworthy, or you came in from a past life where you really believe that you are unworthy, then it can feel impossible to choose your worthiness. But that's ultimately what we have to do. We have to choose ourselves for the light and say that we don't belong to the darkness. And then we don't, because we are the guardians of free will, and our sovereignty is not, it's also a law. Like, They just have to do all kinds of crazy tricks to convince us that we're not sovereign and we're not powerful, but we actually are.
So if we've got multi-generational emotional baggage, right?
Yeah.
That's not our fault, but is our problem.
Yes.
And we've got the Akashic record in the cloud that has a running tally of where we've been, what we've been doing. Is it our job while we're here in this form to do everything that we can, make the most progress so that when they write the next chapter on the Akashic record, that we're going in the correct direction, that we're getting better as a soul, that is this the place where we can make up the most ground here on Earth? Or is it just, we just got to keep coming back and chipping away at this every life over and over again for a long, long time?
Well, what I see is that we don't chip away at it successfully. If we take that long road, what happens is we just get more trauma, we get more fragmented and more unconscious of ourselves. Like if we look at the people who, I don't know, I've never met an NPC, so I don't know. I'm not saying they don't exist. I'm just saying I've never met one. But when I think of the people that are usually being referred to as NPCs, what I just see is like, oh, you've suffered through many lifetimes and you have become so disassociated from yourself, so fragmented that you can't remember your actual essence anymore. And you're just here in a body existing until you die. And, you know, but there's still a soul there. It's just in, it's very fragmented. But I really do, like, when people come to me for soul purpose readings, they want to know what their soul purpose is. The answer is usually, yeah, that you came to clear out a lot of baggage, at least in this lifetime. I don't know if that was true, you know, 500 years ago. But in this lifetime, it really does seem to me like a lot of us are here to clean out a lot of baggage and a lot of trauma. Exactly like you said, almost to like write the best chapter possible for the next chapter. And that doesn't mean that we don't get to have joy and happiness in this life. Complete opposite, which is why I love teaching manifestation, because I keep getting the message that this is the lifetime where we get to have our happiest ending. Finally, after many, many chapters of bullshit, we finally in this lifetime get to have our happiest ending, but we have to claim it. We have to write it. So we're cleaning up the Akasha for the next chapter, but it's not like, therefore you have to suffer in the shit until, you know, your next lifetime or whatever like that. And it's not a very glamorous answer to hear that, you know, for example, if you're here to clean up a lot of stuff through your maternal lineage, like many, like you said, generations of trauma. And a lot of us are doing what we would call shadow work in our free time, and it's totally thankless and nobody sees it, and you're not getting paid for it. That's for damn sure. And it's, you know, it's really hard, but that's just what's required. I really believe that those of us who are alive right now are the cleanup crew. The new babies coming in, I don't know if they're the cleanup crew. They have a whole different energy to them. But those of us who are currently in like adulthood or teenagehood, it seems to me that we're just cleaning up a lot of the stuff.
There's a lot to clean up.
There's a lot to clean up.
We've done a lot of this to ourselves as well. It feels like we're at a, I don't know. It feels like there's a segment of the population that is content to never dig even the slightest bit below the surface of what they're told. They don't want to know what's going on. I want to know. I want to know as much as I can. I have no particular, I don't know what I'm going to do with all this information. But I just want to have as much data as I can to make the decisions that I make. I want to know how it works to the extent that I can. I don't expect my little human brain that has all these limiters on it and has all these governor systems on it that don't allow me to have ESP or telepathy or at least make me think that I don't have all this stuff. I'd like to get rid of some of those things, right? I'd like to unshackle myself a little bit more and see what happens. Is that something that, and when people come to you,
What are they looking for? What do they want? What do they want you? I mean, I know you can't, you're not like waving a magic wand and making all this stuff happen. You're only sort of showing them like, hey, you're going to have to do some of the, you're going to have to do the work. It's not me doing it. Right? You're the one that you're going to have to do the work, pal. You want all this stuff, but what can they get? What can they expect when they come to you? Because I think there's a lot of people out there that need, I don't know, I call it a spiritual pep talk, a shake the shit out of them situation, you know, an airplane, you know, get a hold of yourself when they're all lining up to slap that lady and then shaking her. Some of us need a good shaking, right? We need to shake out of this doldrum that we've been in, this, our monotony, all our bullshit that we've dragged into this. When people come to you, do you give them a good shaking?
I mean, I know that people feel shook. I have a very gentle energy. I'd say like I do my best to deliver everything in the most loving way so that, you know, people don't feel, I don't want people to waste time feeling defensive. Mm. And so I kind of try to do my dance around, you know, ego walls and things like that and still deliver the information. But yeah, ultimately, like I'd say the most helpful thing to me is often it's just like seeing another piece of the puzzle, like seeing, like if you see a past life, it doesn't now mean that you have to journal for hours about this past life that you had. I mean, maybe you do, maybe you don't. I have a past life like that I'm just like, for the love of God, can I just figure out how to resolve this shit? But sometimes it's just as simple as seeing it and being like, oh my God, okay. Okay, well, that's why this pattern keeps occurring. That's why I have that's why I feel so activated and triggered by this one person. Like, it seems like beyond reason in the actual context of our current relationship in this lifetime. You know, like sometimes you just get that validation or confirmation, that extra piece of the puzzle that helps you to see what you actually have to work on. And then sometimes people are coming because they just want to be seen. I honestly think that is one of the biggest wounds that most of us carry, is that our parents couldn't see us. Our teachers couldn't see us. The adults in our lives were also traumatized. They were also carrying around their own stuff. So when we were young children, we were not actually seen for who we are. And then, you know, then you learn how to construct a veneer, a false facade that you present to the outside world to get your emotional needs met. That's, we have to do so much work to deconstruct that. It's crazy. So I think sometimes coming to a reading and being actually seen by somebody is just like, it's almost like you get that need met finally, and you can get over it and move on to other stuff, you know? So yeah, I think that's what, like, most of the people who come to me have already had their bitch slap moment. Like, life already was like, get a hold of yourself. And then they find my podcast and they're like, help me.
Well, your podcast, Third Eye Awakening, is available. People that want to go check that out, people that want to sign up and work with you and start down this process, or maybe get involved in the manifestation boot camp, what's the best place for them to make that happen, to take that addition, take that step and decide, much like I talk about with my sponsors that have health supplements, it's like, this is all here for you. It's going to be up to you whether you decide that you want it. When you decide that you want it, maybe it's not today, maybe it's not tomorrow, but when you're ready for it, it's here for you. So when people are ready for you, what's the best place for them to get a hold of you?
Yeah. AmyBelair.com is where everything lives. I also am semi-active on Instagram. I have my moments where I'm like, I can't handle this social media shit.
I get it.
but I do. I usually post to my stories at very least. So I'm cosmic.oracle on Instagram. And I will never, ever send you a private message soliciting a reading. There are imposters. So just know that if ever somebody reaches out to you and being like, Grand Rising, beloved, the ancestors drew me to your picture and I have a message for you about love and money. Would you like a reading? It's not me. And then I also have a Facebook group called Soul Space. It's a private Facebook group, but it's totally free. And it's just a beautiful place where people go and ask their random questions around spiritual awakening, psychic development, any of the things. It's a great space. So if you're if you're on Facebook, you can come check it out.
But if you do get an email from Amy talking about how you can make a lot of money with Bitcoin, that is probably her. She's trying to scam.
No, that's definitely not me.
That's not her.
I've cracked that code.
That's Amy Belair, everybody. Go check out her site. Go get yourself, go get your oil changed. Go get your emotional oil changed. All right. Go talk to somebody and see how you feel. See if you feel any better. I feel like this is really important for us to get honest with who we are. We're human beings. We got a lot of issues going on. Let's clear this out. If you want to have a good life, the best thing you can do is process the stuff that's going on in your head. And I appreciate you, Amy. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you, Charlie. It was so great to be with you and hold a conversation together.
Hey, if you like this episode, take the additional step right now of sharing it with your friends and family, anybody you think might benefit from this. If you want to connect with me, the website, theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. Thank you, everybody. We'll talk to you again soon.